Okay, good evening, and welcome to the regularly scheduled May 12th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed a student personnel item, one item of litigation, and in closed session, the board voted 7-0 to approve the settlement agreement regarding the legal dispute of a student with special needs. The board approved the settlement agreement to reimburse the parents for educational services and attorney's fees and costs. We also discussed two items of real property and began the superintendent's evaluation. Do we have consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Seeing that we do, do we have approval of the minutes?
On April 20th, during closed session, we did have somebody address the board regarding the Froom Ranch property, a student from Cal Poly, and that was not listed. I don't know his name. I apologize.
Those were comments in open session prior to closed session?
Open session prior to close, yes.
Oh, okay. I think we did not get that information to Mrs. Holmes, so
okay.
We'll be sure and get it to her, and it can be reflected.
I want Mr. Miller to dock his grades.
Would someone like to move approval of those minutes with the notation that there was a speaker and Mrs. Holmes will amend?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Okay, moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mr. Angel. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It passes unanimously. And then we've got the minutes of No.
Phil's comment had to do with April 28th.
Right. Mr. Angel's comments had to do with the meeting of the 28th?
Yes.
Yes.
So.
28th, I am sorry.
Okay, we need action on the minutes of April 20th.
Oh, we approved it with an erroneous.
I was wrong then.
I'll move approval of the minutes of April 20th.
And I'll second. That was a student disciplinary action?
Yes.
Okay. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Abstentions?
Mr. Spadafore, did you want to abstain?
I did, yes.
So that's 6 ayes and 1 abstention. Okay. Am I disorganized? I am. Okay.
So do we do April 28th now?
That's what we did first.
No, we have not done the April 28th minutes. We've just done the April 20th minutes twice.
No, we did the April 20th and then the 20th. April 20th was the expulsion hearing. Then the 28th was the one that Phil said we had someone speak to us.
Okay, well, he said April 20th when he did it.
We corrected that.
Well, in that case, I abstained because I wasn't there.
Okay, will you note that Mr. Millar is abstaining from voting on the minutes of the 20th?
28th.
The 28th.
So are we taking the previous action? The first one is going to hold for the 28th?
I think that
with
we
that
have an
correction.
Approval. Why don't we re-vote the minutes of the 28th?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the 28th.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Abstain.
And I'll abstain as well.
Should it be corrected that you weren't actually there?
And can we correct the minutes to reflect that I was not there? That I was present for closed session and not for open session?
It's stated.
It says Yeah, you're recorded as present, and then your departure is listed later in the minutes.
You're not helping me, Walter. Okay. We have a presentation then. Mr. Robinette? Not Mr. Robinette.
I'm sorry. I made the mistake of sitting next to a Phillies fan. Filling me in on a player who stole second, third, and home all tonight. So, excuse me. Tonight we have the opportunity to celebrate teachers. And as I look at the board agenda, I find that later we have a resolution to commemorate the Day of the Teacher. Your agenda includes a look at a budget. As difficult as the budget decisions might be, it is committed to teaching and learning for all of our children. We will embark on a journey into preschool in our school district and preschool teaching. And you will even have the opportunity tonight to consent to opportunities to send our students with their excellent teachers to National Skills USA finals and automotive troubleshooting events. Because at the heart of everything you do as a Board of Education is the value and the goals and the decision-making that affect our classrooms. The late Fred Rogers of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood fame, and I was a big Mr. Rogers fan, those of us who are in this world to educate, which is really to care for children, have a special calling, a calling that has very little to do with the collection of possessions, but has a lot to do with the worth inside of heads and hearts. And the heads and hearts of our thousands of students are nurtured daily by our hundreds of teachers. It is a privilege tonight to single out a few of our teachers who have been nominated by their own school communities and to present our own San Luis Coastal Teacher of the Year. I don't believe I saw any of our other nominees in attendance tonight. I think just about the entire audience is here to honor our Teacher of the Year. But I would like to let you know of the other individuals who were nominated as Teacher of the Year this year. From Morro Bay High School, English teacher Carolyn Boomer. From Los Osos Middle School, math teacher Murray Kirby. From San Luis Obispo High School, by way of Morro Bay High School, social science teacher Gary Peters. From Bishop's Peak Elementary, teacher of combination classes, no less, for many years, Lori Tangeman. From Laguna Middle School, excellent English teacher Colleen Spafford. But to introduce our Teacher of the Year, I'd like to introduce myself, the principal of Baywood Elementary, Doug Jennison.
Almost forgot the most important person. Well, I am here, and I'm very proud, and I'm very pleased to introduce to you Carol Camo, third grade teacher at Baywood Elementary and San Luis Coastal's Teacher of the Year for 2009. Carol has taught in our school district for 14 years, and all 14 of those years were at Baywood Elementary, teaching grades 3rd, 4th, and 6th. Who knows about next year, Carol? Don't know. Prior to this, she taught in Atascadero Unified School District, and before that, she taught environmental sciences in an outdoor school, and I see a lot of her environmental friends back there as well. So she brings into the classroom her love of teaching and enthusiasm for environmental studies, and anyone who visits Station 12 will see that learning comes alive to all her students, and I emphasize the word all. Carol is experienced, she's organized, she's conscientious, she's organized, she's hardworking, organized, dedicated, and very organized. See, everybody here that knows Carol. In addition, she possesses an innate ability to reach her students at all levels. Her primary focus is to meet the needs of each of her diverse students, and she wants each one to be successful, and she'll do whatever it takes to make that happen. Whether the child is an English learner, has a learning disability, a behavior challenge, an emotional disability, a physical disability, or is a gifted and talented student, Carol masterfully differentiates instruction to help meet the needs of those students. And she is not shy to ask for help, and she will try any new strategy that's different just for the sake of helping those students be successful and to progress. Carol Camo has the unique ability of being both that tenacious bulldog, I think that's the word that Kathy Bonnet came up with here, but it describes her, because she wants to get those students to progress and to succeed. But she also is that kind, nurturing adult friend that builds up the student's self-esteem and confidence. And this is what makes her so special. I've had the privilege of being Carol's principal for the last 10 years, so I've seen her in that realm. She also was my daughter's sixth grade teacher. She was my wife's master teacher when she was going through the credential program. So I had the different vantage points here, and I can attest to you that she is an outstanding teacher and well deserves the honor of being called Teacher of the Year. So thank you, Carol, for all you've done for the students at Baywood School and in our school district. And thank you for keeping all the rest of us organized.
Well deserved, very well deserved. We present this to you. Before you talk, do you want me to bring up the
because she'll make me cry.
Okay.
I'm wondering if there's a way I can talk to you all. Or is that going to mess up the... Can I move? Can I just turn it that way? Great. Okay. When Dr. Valentine came to Baywood and announced I was the San Luis Coastal Teacher of the Year, I was truly speechless. And as my principal, Doug Jennison, noted, that was probably the first time. I am very stunned and very humbled and honored by this recognition. Later that day, as I was standing in my classroom and reflecting on this significant honor, I started to look around, and I began to see bits and pieces of so many of the people who have shaped me into the teacher that I am today. Fellow teachers, especially those who took me under their wing as a beginning teacher, and I am so very honored to have Kathy Orrick here tonight, who, when I first started teaching, came to school for several days with me, helped me set up my classroom. I was new to a sixth grade classroom, and I would not have survived my first year without this woman. So I really appreciate that, and I just know and value mentor teachers. Also, principals have been so helpful, and district colleagues, classroom volunteers, my students, their families, my friends, my families, a special group of friends who are here tonight that I started out teaching in environmental education. I certainly learned how to deal with sixth graders, because if you can handle 100 sixth graders in an outdoor setting, you can do anything. And so many of the people from Camp Keep where I worked are here tonight, and I appreciate that. Just as I'm the product of a collaborative effort, I also recognize the value of a collaborative approach to helping students reach their potential. Several years of serving as the Student Study Success Team Coordinator at Baywood has reinforced my view that students' needs are best met through collaboration. And I am so very proud to be a member of the awesome Baywood staff and our San Luis Coastal District, where we are particularly effective at pulling together families, district staff, volunteers, and community resources to focus on the success of our students. So thank you to all in the educational community for your knowledge, your creativity, your ideas, and most importantly, I really appreciate your daily inspiration. Even though it takes a little extra effort, I love to pull parents and volunteers into my classroom, and there is a standing joke at Baywood. Got a volunteer or student who has extra time? Send them to Camo, she'll put them to work. Recently, my niece came to live with us while she's attending college here, and the first time she visited Baywood, the first thing she heard from several people was, "Watch out for your aunt, she'll have you working before you know it." And I have, and she's been great. I know the value of volunteers, and I appreciate their dedication to our students as supportive aides, role models, and mentors. And collaboratively, we can make a difference in the lives of our students. And I really want to give a very special thank you to my wonderful volunteers past and present, especially Mr. Earl Cawthorn, a senior citizen who cheerfully volunteered in my classroom every day for the 8 years I taught at Santa Margarita School. And I am so honored tonight to have his daughter, Faye Johnson, here, and my former student, A.J. Johnson, with his daughter here tonight. So that's very, very special. And Earl is no longer with us, but he made a huge impact on me and my teaching. And it was quite an inspiration. So thank you for being here. Tomorrow is California's 27th Annual Day of the Teacher, and this year's theme, California Teachers Standing Up for a Better Tomorrow, was selected to emphasize the need to stand up for our schools in the face of our state's $11 billion cuts to education. We have 26,000 California educators that have received pink slips or layoff notices, and among these, very sadly, are 53 employees from my former school district, Atascadero Unified School District, and I read in the paper that very fittingly they were collectively named Teacher of the Year. Across our state, devastating cuts like this are happening, and although our district has fared a little better than many in these tough times, we need to remember that in order for all of California's teachers to be the best we can be, we must work together to save our schools. And I encourage everybody, please make your voice heard by voting in our upcoming special election on May 19th. California schools need your support. I love teaching, and I am very grateful to be working at Baywood and in this district. I want to thank Doug Jennison, my very wonderful supportive principal, Kathy Barnett, our extremely hardworking resource teacher, and Rose DeHaro, our energetic PTA president, for putting forth my nomination. Dr. Valentine and staff, thank you for your support very much. Members of the school board, I appreciate your dedication and the service that you do provide to our district. And thank you, family, friends, colleagues, students, and families who came tonight. I cannot express how honored I feel.
Okay, one more person wanted to say a few words, former parent.
My name is Faye Johnson, and I just wanted to tell you that when my son was in the sixth grade, on the weekend, he couldn't wait for Monday to come because he had Carol Camo. He'd say, "Mom, I just love sixth grade. I just love Carol Camo." And he never felt that way about school before sixth grade with her, and he never felt that way after. And on our very last day of school, we had a field trip, and we were leaving. And he could see her way off in the distance. He says, "Mom, Mom, stop the car. I've got to hug her one last time." So I just want to tell you, she is the best teacher and so deserving. And we're so thrilled for her tonight. Thank you.
Carol will be our school district's nominee or candidate for County Teacher of the Year, so her name will be moving forward, and her name will be part of our perpetual plaque of Teachers of the Year at the district office. And at this time, we have some cake, I believe, over there for a short reception in honor of all of our teachers. Thanks.
So I think we'll break for 10 minutes or so that we'll have an opportunity to congratulate Mrs. Camo. She's a wonderful, wonderful teacher.
Bye, Carol. Congratulations.
Good night. Okay, then, moving on. At the time the agenda was prepared, no correspondence had been received. And now we have public comment. Are there any requests?
No request to speak, Madam President.
Okay, we have no written request to speak. Is there anyone here who would like to address the board? Okay, seeing no one. Then we'll move on to reports by student representatives, school staff, and administrators. We have Katie O'Neill from San Luis Obispo High School.
Okay, is it on? Okay. Hi, guys. Okay. So we've been having a lot of success at San Luis High since the last time I was here. It was mentioned before, but our four AAA troubleshooting team with Eric Reed and Doug Rennell, two seniors, and our auto teacher, Mr. Lemkuhl, won the four AAA shooting state championship, which is awesome. So, and then our Skills USA team did really well at the state competition as well. We have three state champions, Nick Benedetto in welding, Jesse Castaneda in drafting, and Elena Dente. And Nick and Jesse are going to go to nationals and along with the rest of our Skills USA team. So, and also we have six spring sports teams that won PAC 7 championship. And that's our boys baseball, boys golf, boys tennis, boys swimming, boys volleyball, and girls track. So we really had a good sports season. On May 2nd, ASB put on our annual prom, and our theme this year was Midnight in Manhattan. And it went really well. We had over 500 people in attendance, and overall the night was really fun. So our seniors went on their Disneyland trip in late April as a reward for our excellent state testing last year. So hopefully we can live up to that and do it again next year for us seniors. And then our Pennies for Polio drive has started up again with Interact Club heading it. And we have cartons all around campus, and teachers are always shaking their cartons, you know, put in your pennies, and we've been collecting a lot. And with the matching of what the students made last year from the Rotary Club and the Bill Gates Foundation, we made $18,000 last year. So we're hoping to get maybe a little bit more or, you know, something around there because that's awesome. You know, I think it's going on for a month, so I think it's probably going to end in early June. And then our open house was on the 6th, and we had really good attendance, and it went really well all around. And then our Golden Tiger Awards will be presented next week on the 20th in the new gym. Those are our departmental awards. And our Black and Gold Athletic Awards will be presented the next day on the 21st, also in the new gym. On the 18th, we're going to hold our AVID parent meeting for the new AVID class next year at 6:30 in the cafeteria. And on the 19th, we're going to hold our final ELAC meeting in the library, I believe, and this meeting is going to be really exciting because we're going to be celebrating and recognizing student achievement. Our 24-hour relay is coming up. It's going to be the 23rd and the 24th of this month at Holt Field, hosted by Friday Night Live and our school, and it's always a really big event. We have a lot of teams signed up again this year, and it's going to be really fun, like drug and alcohol-free environment, and it's always a blast. So, every board member is invited to all of these events that I've just listed. There's kind of a lot, but if you want to come, we totally welcome you. So, and then also our staff voted and chose Mr. Gary Peters as their Teacher of the Year, and our students voted and chose Ms. Pam Richards. And I haven't had Mr. Peters because I'm not a senior yet, but I have had Mrs. Richards, and I can say from experience, she's really welcoming, and as a ninth grade teacher, it's always nice to have that really nice teacher who you can go to their class and just feel comfortable, and she's a great health teacher, and I mean, I'm really honored to say that she won the award this year. And yeah, that's basically all that's going on at the high school.
Thank you. And we have Rachel Ayotte. Are you in the same family as Lindsay Ayotte?
Yes, ma'am.
She's an emeritus student representative to the board that we really enjoyed having, so we welcome you.
Awesome, thank you.
From Morro Bay High School.
Yes, I'm filling in for Matt. He's at a scholarship meeting, so he's sorry he couldn't be here. I'm sure most of you know this already, but I just wanted to officially announce that Morro Bay High School is again a California Distinguished School for 2009. We are very proud of our wonderful teachers, especially the MBHS Teacher of the Year, Ms. Caroline Boomer. She's a great one. We have two Skills USA national qualifiers, and our Ford troubleshooting auto team finished 7th place in the state, which is quite an honor. We have one national FFA qualifier and an FHA hero member that is a state champion. I am unaware, actually, but I'm sure that wouldn't be that hard to find out. We had our junior-senior prom this past Saturday at the SLO Veterans Hall. It was Hollywood-themed, and we had a little over 300 that attended, and it was really fun. I got to be a big part of that. Our sports are doing great. We have several CIF qualifiers. Our softball team is playing for the league championship on Thursday. We've had Cassie makeups today and continuing tomorrow. And our annual academic awards banquet is tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. in the new gym, if any of you would like to come. May 26th is the choir concert at 7 p.m. at the PAC Center at Cal Poly for our choir. And the following day, May 27th, is the Mora Bay High School band concert at 7 p.m. at the PAC also. May 28th, ASB, myself included, is hosting the second annual Central Coast Leadership Conference. Schools from all around, outside our district and in our district, come and we hang out in the old gym. We have different stations and activities where we talk about homecoming and lunch activities, and just so we can get an idea of how other schools run their ASB. And that's always really fun. It's our second one. The last one went well. We have sports physicals on the 28th, and our spring's sports banquet is 6 p.m. on June 1st to celebrate all the spring sports athletes. Senior tribute and awards are June 9th at 6 p.m. I think they're in the old gym. The senior outing, they're going to the water park in Paso Robles, I believe, again, June 10th. Graduation is June 11th, the big day. Staff retirement party lunch, June 12th, 11:30 a.m. in the cafeteria. And we've had a good school year, and we hope to go out with a bang. So thank you.
Thank you. Katie and Rachel, thank you for coming and letting us know what's going on at the high schools. As always, you are welcome to stay if you'd like to stay and participate in the meeting, but we know that you have homework and other things to do, so you may also feel free to leave with our thanks. Okay.
Thank you.
Let's see. School staff, no school staff and administrator reports. Then Mr. Miller, status of the state budget.
Thank you. The status of the state budget is a quickly evolving and constantly moving target. I have something to read, and I apologize for reading it, but I think it's well written enough that it'll pass the test. And understand, this was from Thursday of last week. Signs of further deterioration of the state's general fund rose again Thursday with a new report from the legislative analyst regarding cash flow. Remember the good old days 2 months ago when 17-month budget was adopted and the state's cash position improved so much the state controller began paying bills and actually issuing tax refunds? Well, while the state will end 2008-2009 with $6.9 billion in cash, what's called a cash cushion, that cushion is all borrowable money. There is no actual reserves from earnings or savings in the general fund. That's a huge turnaround from 2005-2006 when the state ended the fiscal year with $21.5 billion. Once the state passes into the month of July, however, the real cash crash begins. Recent revenue projections show that the state general fund is going to be at least $8 billion short. Remember, this is Thursday last week. $8 billion short in 2009-2010 based on the February budget. If the May 19th ballot measures all fail, the 2009-2010 budget deficit could grow another $6 billion beyond that. Even if the ballot measures all pass, the analyst report, this is the key, report projects that in November of 2009, the state's cash position will be a negative $11 billion. In November, the state will be out of money and unable to pay its appropriations to other agencies, pay its bills, put money into cities, districts, and other agencies. Where does the state go to address its cash crisis? There aren't that many options. In reality, the options are revenue increases, borrowing, spending cuts, and payment deferrals, with an emphasis on payment deferrals. The cash position is actually a short-term problem between the month of July and November until December 10th, when property tax revenues start coming due and a huge amount of cash starts flowing back to local and state governments again. But in the meantime, with a negative $11 billion coming in November, how will they pay the appropriations to school districts for their ADA and revenue limit? How will they pay cities the amount of money they pay them? One of their issues is that they're going to try and borrow from cities. Cities have a nice cash position because somehow the local elected officials have actually done their job and balanced the budget and not overspent what they didn't have, so that they actually have enough money in their coffers to assist the state. The state's going to attempt to get to that local money in order to address its cash flow. Chris?
Is there a chance that they might try to borrow local property tax revenues?
Yes.
That might be going to school districts?
It could be. They very well could be. They're going to be desperate for their money, and that's the point of this. For schools with a Prop 98 guarantee, dropping at least $3.6 billion in 2009-2010, what the projected deficit will do is lower the Prop 98 guarantee to an additional $3.6 billion cut to school districts above and beyond what's already been projected as a cut. What that translates to is $610 per student in the state of California. If you're a revenue limit district and your current ADA is $10,000, $610 per student translates to excess of $6 million. And remember, you've already been deficited 13.09% of your revenue limit, which is probably really close to another $4, $5, $6 million, depending on your revenue limit. So you have a cumulative cut coming from the state, if this plays out, of over $10 million on a 10,000 student school district. Now, fast forward to today, this morning. Same organization, same news format. More proof that things in Sacramento are in a serious state of flux. The governor is now expected to release his May revision this Thursday, day after tomorrow. And it's going to come out, and he's going to put out what his scenario is if the propositions pass and what happens if they don't pass. But here comes the news. Rather than wait until after the election, the governor will lay out his recommendations of what is going to be necessary. There was an article in the Sunday Sacramento Bee explaining how the legislature is beginning to grapple with the budget deficit that is continuing to grow. In the article, there is a reference to the legislative analyst estimating in March that the Prop 98 guarantee could drop by $3.6 billion, but that the LA, quote unquote, now believes the state could reduce funding by roughly $5 billion because revenue is projected to drop further. They missed their revenue projections on the personal income tax by $2 billion. So the $8 billion deficit is now $10 billion. And what the governor said this morning in a news thing, it's $15.4 billion. So since last Thursday, the deficit grew from $8 billion to $15.4 billion. And if it fails, if the propositions fail, it will go to $21.3 billion after the election. There is probably not going to be an official estimate given in the May revise in 2 days. They'll stay with the $3.6 billion number because they truly don't know how that is going to resolve it. The $5 billion or $6 billion or whatever that's going to be isn't going to resolve itself before the end of June and probably well into July, actually. But the key piece for schools is that the train wreck is happening, and there is no way to stop it. The problem is, how do you address a budget or a organization which is going to lose 20-25% of its revenues overnight? I think Ed's going to deliver what some of these cuts might look like in terms of jobs and programs and people and stuff, but it is big enough that the only option left are tremendous numbers of layoffs to school districts and no solution in sight for the state. Truly, what are they going to do to solve another potential $21.3 billion after they thought they had something done for the 40, which we know was a little bit of a shell game, but still, $40 billion, $21.3 billion. How far does it go? I'm done.
Well, I wish I could say thank you, Mr. Miller. Reports by board members. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I had kind of a busy week, and it'll be capped by another interesting busy weekend, I think, especially after what Mr. Miller said. I was fortunate enough to go to the AXA dinner, I think it was last week, wasn't it? I can't even remember. It seemed like it was so long ago, where our own Amy Shields was honored, and so was Ed Valentine. Ed was honored as superintendent for the AXA region of the year, and Amy was, what was she, most inspirational leader or something? Leadership Matters, which was really a wonderfully impressive award for her. I was able to go to the Special Olympics and see our district athletes and athletes from throughout the county participate in the various events. I got to go to the opening ceremonies, and as always, it was very touching. Following that, I was able to go to a bullying webinar that the county office put on, and our own Karen Lopez, Dana Francis, Rose Fowler, and actually one of our interns, Janine McLennan, was there, and we were learning about bullying, and I walked in on the cyberbullying part, which was really interesting, and something I'd like to talk about later with actually you guys with Advanced Agenda. Mark and I will be going to the CSBA meeting this Saturday. Mark will be the delegate. I'm going to directors on Friday. Mark's going on Saturday to the delegate assembly. And then Phil's joining us on Sunday for the legislative action where we'll be knocking on legislators' doors. And speaking on knocking on legislators' doors, I want to congratulate Sam Blakesley for stepping into the MAW as minority leader. And we'll definitely be seeing him on Monday. I would be happy to talk to him and help him solve the state budget, although I'm not sure that he wants to hear what I have to say. Thanks to Mark Buckman for bringing Tom Torlakson, who's running for state superintendent of public instruction, to San Luis Obispo, and we really got to hear some good stuff from that, too. And then finally, I got to go to the CTA baseball game Saturday night. Had a great time with the teachers, and then following that, it was the special ed prom. So, boy, it was quite a week to see our kids and see what great stuff our district's doing.
Thanks, Chris. Mr. Buckman.
I don't know. I did, Chris.
Is still your thunder
hard act to take care of. I had the opportunity to represent the county at the state PTA convention. We heard Jack O'Connell, and I would like to point out that the PTA is the organization that pushed through the Day of the Teacher and state legislation back in the 80s. So that it is a very powerful group with a million members in the state of California. There was going around among the teachers and classroom aides a note from the County Office of Education that there's a possibility of dropping poetry from the writing contest. And so a lot of us responded to that. And I did get a letter from a Cal Poly professor on this. And as a member of the Arts Obispo Education Committee and someone involved with Poetry Out Loud, I strongly voted against it, and it was saved. So poetry will continue in the and I'm not sure why poetry, but I think it's really a doorway for a lot of kids because they don't communicate very well in narrative form. And just picking up on what Chris said, we were able to bring Tom Torlakson to San Luis Obispo County. About 10 people met with him in a sort of a very informal setting. There were people from the North County, South County, board members, parents, PTA, and administrators. And it was, I think the discussion among everybody, even without Tom, was important. But with Assemblyman Torlakson there, it was really good, a good event. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you.
I got one here.
Mr. Angel.
I had the opportunity last week to attend the Hawthorne Open House. Great things going on. Really impressed with what I saw across the grade levels. But highlighting the leadership there at Hawthorne, the theme, the different countries, their theme was having an international theme, and so each classroom you went into, you saw writing from Mexico and Czechoslovakia, lots of places, Germany, and all kinds of great places. And then I also would like to just point out publicly that today is the president, Madam President's birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Mr. Spadafor.
Thank you. Everybody on the board, I think, went to the School Board Association dinner honoring the classified employee of the year. I think everybody was there with the administration, which was a great honor. And I attended the Cuesta College Board of Trustees meeting because the administration, the board, and the teachers are entering into training for interest-based bargaining. And I was interested to see the background and the direction that was going. And the consensus out of Cuesta College is that there was a sense of frustration over years of stagnated discussions and difficulty addressing issues, and they all wanted to attempt this approach using interest-based bargaining. And so far, the training has been quite successful from the teachers, the administrators, and the board's perspective, and they're all participating. So I found that interesting, considering our situation in many aspects and the board's interest in how that would work. Thank you.
Thanks, John. No further reports. We'll move on then. Item 4 is a resolution, resolution number 14-08-09, authorization for year-end transfers.
I'll take this one. This is a normal end-of-the-year resolution that we ask the board to grant us the authority to put our budget transfers into play before you guys have a chance to authorize it. It's a necessary piece so that we can close our year end. I assure you that by the time we do our year end approvals, you will understand all of our budget transfers and have a subsequent opportunity to approve them.
Move approval of resolution 14-08-09.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Millar, seconded by Mr. Spadafor.
Mr. Millar.
Aye.
Mr. Spadafor.
Aye.
Mr. Angel.
Aye.
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Mrs. Roger.
Aye.
Mr. Buckman. Yes. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Passes 7-0.
Okay. Item 5 is resolution number 15-08-09. Day of the Teacher, May 13th, 2009. Mr. Robinette.
As has already been mentioned by Mr. Buckman, and previously, tomorrow, May 13th, 2009, is designated by the state legislature as the Day of the Teacher. And in keeping with this designation, we are encouraging the board to pass a proclamation designating May 13th as Day of the Teacher.
I move approval of resolution number 150809.
I'd like to second that.
Okay, moved by Mr. Unger, seconded by Mr. Buckman.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Spadafor?
Yes.
Mr. Angel?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Okay, item 6. Number 16-08-09, Classified School Employee Week. May 17th through 23rd, 2009. Again, Mr. Robinette.
Well, following the Day of the Teacher, next week we have Classified School Employee Week. Once again, our state legislature enacted legislation 23 years ago to designate the third week in May of each year to be observed as Classified School Employee Week, and we would like the board to pass a resolution for a proclamation designating it thus.
I move adoption of resolution number 160809.
Second. Sorry to interrupt.
Moved by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers and seconded by Mr. Angel.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Angel?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Spadafor?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Okay, action discussion items. Item 7. is the 2009-2010 budget. First reading. Dr. Valentine.
Well, good evening. I actually had toyed with the idea of using overheads and having everybody turn around, but as there is nobody but you there, I would ask that you use your board booklet at this point in time unless you'd prefer that I put the same information up on the screen. So anyway, thank you, Madam Chair. Tonight we're bringing to the board the launch of our budget conversation regarding the 2009-2010 budget. As Russell shared, the budget picture is darkening. State revenue intake is not meeting expectations. Next week's ballot measures are uncertain, and there are prognostications that the state will run out of cash by November. Planning a budget in this environment is difficult. And tonight we're going to do something that may be a little unusual. We're sharing a way of thinking about the budget and not a particular recommendation so far. We do this, sharing a way of thinking, for three reasons. The first is to feature the highly speculative and uncertain nature of the problem that we're dealing with. The second is to make clear that the wheels are in motion to deal with whatever problem does come forward. And third, to present a strategy for making a huge and potentially unwieldy task manageable. And we'll explain as we go. As we clarify our thinking, and this will be in your book on the front page, it's important to find first our core values which drive our thinking. We have five. To continue the district mission and strategic plan with emphasis on closing the achievement gap. To maintain a commitment to the employment of our workforce. To sustain sufficient reserves to allow us time to adjust to a deepening recession. To avoid long-term commitments with short-term money. And to provide a fair and competitive compensation package. We will use these core values to evaluate whatever approach we develop. As we noted, it is still unclear what economic realities we must address, but in spite of that, we can't stand still, and so we factor in what we know, and we make assumptions about what we don't know as we develop our way of thinking. Here are our assumptions. Property tax revenues will be flat. There will be no new revenue in San Luis Coastal. We assume that state categorical funding will be 20% less because that's the cut that has already occurred over the two-year period of 08-09 and 09-10. Built-in step and column annual salary increases will continue. Our salary increases will be a maximum of 3% in 09-10. The one good assumption we have is that health and benefit costs are not going to go up in 09-10. Not, please.
What's that based on?
That's based on not the fact that health and benefit costs won't go up, but that the consortium we are in has sufficient reserves to spare us the increase and will absorb the increase for at least 1 year. And so for 09-10, those costs won't go up. And the final assumption that we're going to work with in developing our way of thinking is that there will be significant new cuts to education based upon a deteriorating state economy. We've quantified our assumptions on page 2 of the backup into a hypothetical scenario totaling $5.85 million of problem, hypothetical problem, in 09-10. The problem could be worse, and we'll detail a way of dealing with that. The problem could be better, and we'll talk about that too. For purposes of this discussion, however, $5.85 million puts us in a position to define our thinking in response to a budget calamity. By far, the biggest contributor to the $5.85 million hypothetical problem is our assumption about further state cuts. We estimated the number at $3.2 million. And where did that number come from? The short answer is that we made it up. The longer answer is a little less glib, and that is that our main source of state funding comes from categorical programs. That was a source of prior cuts in state funding. And so we believe it is as logical as not that that is where future cuts may come from. How deep? We don't know. But let's assume deep, 50% of our total categorical funding, or $3.2 million. Throw that into the mix, and we come up with a $5.85 million hypothetical problem. Now, how to respond? The response is actually simple. If we face a $5.85 million problem, then we will address it with $5.85 million in available resources, guided by our core values. In pages 2 through 5, we define and quantify the list of resources we might call upon to address the problem. It is a list of almost everything. It includes reserves, staffing reductions, categorical program cuts, strategic plan cuts, and school closures. Did I mention that we are not bringing this as a recommendation, but as a template for a way of thinking? Our thinking is that if we must reduce expenditures, it will come from the things that we spend money on, not profound. We've also listed possible sources of increased revenue in the district, and we would apply that as well to the problem. So how might we approach a $5.85 million problem in this landscape? The answer lies in our core values and the list of resources we just described. On page 6 in the backup, we provide a template for thinking about a 3-year solution. I'm going to focus on the first year of the solution, the 09-10 response. Specifically, we list $5.8 million in cuts and revenue enhancements and the possible resources from which to take cuts. The list includes the implementation of categorical cuts, a use of one-time federal stimulus dollars, a spending down of reserves in several categories, a reduction in professional development and instructional materials, and a use of revenue-generating strategies. Could the list be different? You bet, and it probably will be. There are things on this list which I would be extremely reluctant to recommend to you. But as a way of thinking and not a recommendation, we put this forward for analysis and ask, how does this measure up to our core values? Those core values, again, are listed on page 1. As a way of thinking, the template response that you're looking at sustains the primacy of the strategic plan in the budget. There are no strategic plan cuts in the template. It minimizes layoffs in the first 2 years. It spreads out calls on the district reserves over a 2-year period, but significantly reduces those resources. Competitive salary commitments continue. Significant ongoing resources remain in the form of programs which could be reduced or eliminated in the future. All revenue sources, such as retirement savings, income from special education services, and property tax revenues, have been estimated conservatively and could prove better than estimated. But all in all, not a bad starting point for discussion. There are problems with the template. It reduces reserves to a dangerous level. It funds recent long-term salary commitments with basically one-time money. Both of those are troublesome. Again, this is not a recommendation, but a template for a way of thinking. So what if we disagree with the list of cuts? And we assume there will be disagreement. When that occurs, we will debate the trading of one cut from the list of resources for another and compare the result to our core values. What if the problem is bigger? We will add from the list of resources and compare to our core values. What if the problem is smaller? We will subtract from the list and compare to our core values. This gives us something to look at and a set of values to apply to our decisions. It makes the process of thinking about this manageable. Have we received input so far? Absolutely and extensively. We've received input from curriculum council, elementary principals, secondary principals, classified management, district management, and at PTA president's meetings regarding strategic plan priorities. This presentation itself has been shared with all of those same groups. In the backup at the end is a summary of over 24 pages of itemized input from those groups. The general direction is to continue with the strategic plan, expand when possible in the areas indicated, and place special emphasis on programs for English learners and at-risk students. When the above scenario, when the previous scenario, was shared with various groups, there were concerns about professional development cuts, which appear in the template, and encouragement to seek alternative cuts before a recommendation is crafted, and we certainly would do so. When would we do this? We have core values. We have a way of thinking about the problem. We have plenty of input. What we don't have is a clear picture of the size of the problem. That will become clearer as the results of next week's balloting become known, as the governor's May revise is shared, as the legislature's response to the revise is defined, and as the property tax revenues in San Luis Coastal are clarified. These decision points carry us well into summer, and regardless of where these events lead us, we have a value-driven template to use as a starting point for up to $5.85 million of reduction and a system for adding, subtracting, or exchanging cuts as necessary. I think that's where we need to be for now. I'm going to stop here and entertain questions or reactions, and then I'll turn the conversation over to Russell Miller for some initial staging of the budgeting process.
Mr. Unger.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. I think you expressed my concern is that we're backfilling, or we're proposing to backfill a lot of this $5.8 million with one-time money. We all know that that's something that the board's been very concerned about, and I appreciate your looking at that. And not only that, but some of these things I'm looking at, not only would we be backfilling from those accounts, but we'd have to ultimately replace that money, too. I'm thinking about the post-retirement health benefits account, for example. So money we take from that has to be returned. Hopefully, we would never get below our 3% reserve, but we did go to 5% to provide essentially what's a soft landing, which I think is what we've talked about. One thing that I'm curious about, or that I'm thinking is, I think this is the right way to look at it. I'm wondering if it's time, though, to do what we've done in the past when we've had significant budget cuts, and that is to have essentially a blue ribbon panel of community members, some of the folks that you're talking about, to provide the input to you as the superintendent. I know that we did that in 2000, I believe it was 2001, as well as the groups that you've talked to. But I think I'd like us to look externally for those comments as well if we're going to actually be making this, if we believe, and I believe we're going to get pretty significantly stung. One of the things that we didn't mention about the meeting that we had with Mr. Torlakson was the sense from non-basic aid school districts in the county that that the playing field should be leveled and that there should be no such thing as basic aid. And I think that probably as the economic depths continue to sink, I think we're going to see more of that, which we've all talked about. So I'm proposing that, and I don't know if now is the time to do it, but that we use that process that we've used before to provide input to you, a superintendent's recommendation, your committee, or whatever we called it.
Thank you.
Mr. Mueller.
Well, I think there is some differences in both what we're facing now, obviously, in what Dr. Valentine has laid out as sort of a template for planning, and I'm not sure I do want to open it up to a blue ribbon committee. I think we are the blue ribbon committee, and the recommendations that we end up ultimately being presented to us. So I see it somewhat differently than when we knew we were going to have to close schools. We knew we had a fixed amount of money we had to come up with. This is a combination of using reserves and various revenues to buy time to minimize the impact of the recession on both programs and employment, as I'm kind of getting it. So to me, it's somewhat technical and somewhat surgical, and I'm not sure that that approach is benefited by a Blue Ribbon Committee.
Mr. Buckman.
Ed, I appreciate all this work. It does make it easier to understand what's going on. I have, on the 2009-2010 proposed solutions, I will call them rather than cuts. The one thing that does concern me is the deferring of the textbook adoption because of the cycle being so long. If we miss one set of adoptions, we're going to have kids with textbooks for at that end of that is probably 6 to 7 year old textbooks. And I'm hoping we can find some other solution rather than impacting the children. And I have to agree with Chris. I think going out to a broader group than what we normally do may help us find solutions within this.
John?
Yeah, thank you very much. I thought that the information is very, very helpful and well presented to start to ask these questions and look at the potential responses. But there's something different today than there was 8 years ago when I believe at that point the unitary tax was a one-issue matter that really cut into our budget. This represents to me more of a systemic problem, not only within the state of California but also within the country. And I think when you look for solutions, it to me is almost overwhelming because you're not only looking at a unitary tax, but you're looking at unemployment, you're looking at property tax, you're looking at income tax, you're looking at ways that the state funds itself in many different ways. And I think Chris's comment about where will the state go, and that's what Russell was talking about earlier, because somebody in ultimate power is going to start making decisions that affects others down the line. So I'm just wondering about if there is a worst-case scenario that we can ever identify, what would that be other than 1 year or 2 years? But what would it be for a five-year period if the turnaround for the economy is going to take that long? And what if, heaven forbid, a different funding schedule or means goes into place for the entire state that affects us specifically? You know, I mean, is not...
At some point or another, I get nervous that we'll have to bring those cuts to our kids. So I like looking at the three-year projection and trying to keep them away as far away from kids as possible. Textbooks, you know, we can live with that, I think. And I appreciate your work.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are there any other
Thank
you. Comments? Thank you, Dr. Valentine.
Now,
Mr.
I think
Miller.
We have part two of our little two-step drama going on. And what we're doing, again, this year, as we've done every year in past memory, is to try and create a budget without enough solid information from the state to be very accurate about it. But... with experience over the past many, many years, we've been able to narrow things down to a list of description or a list of assumptions that allow us to make a construct that is reasonable in terms of what we do know. I think that Dr. Valentine has laid out for you the antithesis of what we've been doing in the past, which was to build program capacity off of our resources. And in this particular year, we're going to have to reduce program capacity based upon the expectations that we have. It's a far, far better process to have a built-in list of assumptions and a built-in list of expectations to lead us down that path rather than to go into an emergency crisis budget-cutting mode that would result in some sort of a hasty decision that might not be for the benefit of, as Mr. Angel was talking about, kids. And I think following the core values is a great way to frame our questions. and then eventually come to our solutions. In the 2009-2010 budget, we will be bringing to you for an approval sometime around June 15th, second meeting in June, maybe the first meeting in June, depending on how comfortable the board is with the process. And there is going to be an opportunity to not only discuss the uncertainties, but to recognize there will be a lot of uncertainties even at that time, things we won't know until July, August, or September. Example, we don't even know what our current we won't know what our 2009-2010 property tax base income is going to be for sure until August 15th. But there are some currently known items, and the statutory COLA for 2009-2010 has been set at 4.25%. That basically has the ramifications on categorical funds that are going to retain some sort of a COLA increase. Certainly nothing else in our world is going to revolve around COLA in this particular year. State revenues will experience a deficit. There's going to be deficiting of our hourly programs, our summer school programs. There's going to be deficiting of the adult ed program. There's going to be many deficits that are going to be part of our life. Tier 3 categorical programs will be considered unrestricted through 2012 and 2013. And more cuts. It's almost assured that the propositions are not going to pass, except for one of them, the one that requires the legislators to take a pay cut if they can't do their job. But after that, the rest of them are in dire shape right now. The uncertainties that still exist regarding the budget, the size of the deficit, we don't know. How property tax revenues will react to the declining housing market, we're not sure of when it's going to bottom out. Probably the bottoming out will happen long before we're aware of it. It'll only be with a view from the future into the past that we'll be able to say, hey, that was the date that it bottomed out. But sometime it'll happen. And the exact amount of the this item is becoming more and more apparent, but there's still some unknowns, of the federal stimulus money. There's three segments of that money. We know the two biggest for ourselves are in the Title I and the IDEA money. We know exactly how much we're scheduled to receive from that. I'll let you know when the money is in hand so we can book it and spend it, but we have gotten some guidance about what it's going to be. The third item is some economic stabilization, fiscal stabilization money that the feds are passing down basically to revenue limit districts, but there's a small amount, somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000, which will pass to us on the basis of our categorical programs. We don't know what that is yet, but we'll let you know when we find out. The general fund summary found on the next page is based upon the assumptions that will continue to be updated and revised as new information is received. That general fund summary is your recognizable, familiar format of talking about where our income is and where our expenditures are, and then what we project as either a surplus or deficit in our budget. But the assumptions that we build into that piece at this moment, and recognize the moment is changing as it moves along, no increase to property tax revenues, no federal stimulus revenue has been budgeted at this time. We won't budget that until we actually receive it because it's uncertain until the last moment, in my opinion. Tier 3 state categoricals will be reduced by an additional 4.5 over the 15.5 that's already been reduced. Salary adjustments in 08-09 are included. However, we did no salary adjustments at this moment for 09-10, and that's basically to remain consistent to our revenue projections. If we're flatlining our revenue projections, then we have a clause in the 09-10 that brings us back to the table to negotiate further about the amount of salary increase that would be available on the basis of reduced revenues. And we estimate the ending balances from restricted programs that are not subject to being swept into the unrestricted ending fund balance. That's an estimate which we think is important to do so that we can reflect properly some sort of an ending balance for you guys in terms of how much revenue is going to drop to the bottom. And very quickly, on this page 7.B.2, the general fund summary, we're looking at a revenue limit, or basically our property taxes, somewhere in the $59 million range with some federal restricted money of $2.6 million, state restricted money of $6.5 million, and local generated revenues of $3.3 million. Total revenue of one-time money that we set aside for specific uses at some point in the future. And then we have $3.8 million of general revenues that we are categorizing for specific uses, balances swept into the general fund, the MA reimbursement, and lottery money, with an unappropriated balance of $2 million. That's a projection at the moment. It is absolutely going to change. Did I tell you this was a forecast and not a budget at this point? Just to parrot Dr. Valentine, we want to remind you guys all along as we go through this process that until we get some definition from the state, there's really nothing that we have here that's going to be set in stone, except for our certainty that things are going to be uncertain into the future. Thank you.
Any comments? Thank you, Mr. Miller. Item 8 is ratification of the board vote for CSBA delegate.
I move approval of item number 8.
Second. Go ahead. Go ahead, Walt.
Okay. So that's moved by Mr. Unger and seconded by Mr. Millar. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Item 9, acceptance of 2009-2010 Personnel Commission budget and notice of public hearing.
Thank you. I've attached a proposed budget for the 09-10 Personnel Commission, and it's the board's prerogative to receive this budget and appoint, if at all possible, a representative to attend a public hearing at the next Personnel Commission meeting. We came under budget again this year and budgeted very conservatively, knowing the forecast, and so the only increases here are reflected in salaries and statutory benefits for employees. From the Personnel Commission, and have actually made some cuts in our advertising budget to hopefully stay under budget for the commission. But I'm available to answer any questions about the Personnel Commission budget, should you have any.
Mr. Spadafor.
Yeah, Rick, thank you. Is there any connection between the 900% increase in legal fees and the increase in advertising?
We've adopted a budget of $10,000 for legal fees, but as you know, our actual expenditures and estimated expenditures have come far under that. We've become more strategic in our advertising, and so that's where we're making those cuts. There's some free places to get the word out, and we're utilizing those.
And then the other question I had on the conference administration, was there more encouragement for is that for the classified employees, or is that for?
It's actually for our personnel commissioners, and we did have one of our commissioners attend the personnel commission meeting. And we are anticipating sending at least one or two of them next year.
And if any other board member, I just mentioned this, wants to go that.
I'm saying it right. The 2XXXXX section there
of the budget.
Sachs code, yeah.
Oh, the account numbers?
Yes.
Yeah, the account numbers are the standard account code classification from our SACS, which is the standard account code system.
So would this budget come from a variety of places on the SACS code? Is that
yes.
How that works? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. I think John volunteered to go, and we thanked him. I think then we need to vote to accept the budget. Is that correct? But first, it's a public hearing, so we are.
Now, this is the legal notification to the public that there's going to be a public hearing, and that shows up on a future agenda.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, the hearing is at the public, is at the Personnel Commission, not here. It's just saying there will be a hearing. It will be at the Personnel Commission meeting.
Okay. I'm with you. Item 10. Award of bid number 226, playground construction at C.L. Smith Elementary School. Mr. Parker.
This represents one portion of the C.L. Smith preschool facility changes that the board approved. We had great interest in the bid, as you know, so we had 8 bidders, and they're tightly grouped, and we're recommending an award tonight.
I make a motion to award bid number 226 as designated by the staff in their recommendation.
And I'll second that. So moved by Mr. Spadafore, seconded by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Okay. The action consent agenda. Please let me know if you would like anything pulled. Item 11, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 12, acceptance of donations. Item 13, disposition of surplus property. 14, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Item 15, approval of purchase orders. 16, approval of warrants and payroll. 17, approval of California High School exit exam, CASI waivers for students with disabilities. 18, approval of out-of-state field study trips, the National Ford AAA Finals, and the National Skills USA competition. And item 19, approval of international student exchange program.
Madam President.
Mr. Buckland.
I think I move for the approval of, if I've got this right, 11, 12, 13, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19.
Yes.
I'll second.
Moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mr. Spadafore. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, that passes unanimously. Mr. Unger?
Yeah, on the first, could somebody explain to me the 2008 Ford 350 with mobility equipment for $34,000, please?
Mr. Unger?
Yeah, as I mentioned at the bullying webinar, it was brought up that a couple of things that we should be investigating a board policy on bullying, and I don't know if that's currently a board policy that we have or not. I didn't get a chance to look at that. And part of the reason for that was in discussions with Karen Lopez, apparently there have been some changes to Ed Code related to bullying, which may affect expulsions. And so I think we're going to need to probably have some board policy about that, as well as I mentioned to Mrs. Lopez that if we're going to start expelling kids for bullying, then we need to start also looking at what resources are out there for kids for that. So I would ask that we investigate whether we have a board policy on bullying, all kinds of bullying, including electronic bullying, and what the implications of that in regard to the new Ed Code would be.
Okay, so do you want that as an advance agenda item? Would you like to take it in Friday packet, just whether we have a board policy? And
I think we can start with it as a Friday packet item, but I suspect that if we don't have current language, that we'll need to go forward on looking at board policy on this.
Okay.
But that would be a second discussion. So I would be okay with it as a Friday packet.
So we'll start with Friday packet,
yeah.
The bullying policy, if there is one,
yes,
for our review.
Yes, that would be fine.
That works.
Thank you.
Okay. I think that's good. Okay. Mr. Spadafore.
No, thank you. I wanted to find out the sentiment the board has for possibly having administrators and board members who attend the Pacific Beach High School graduation to wear gowns, as we do at Morro Bay High School and San Luis High School. Last year, the graduates at Pacific Beach High School wore gowns, and I just thought it might be a sign of respect to recognize the solemnity and the status. But I wanted to kind of introduce that to the rest of the board to see how everybody felt about that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, and I think that I know I have a cap and gown just sort of that I hold on to. Does everybody have one? Mm-hmm. Mr. Angel, you have one?
Okay.
Okay. So then are we in agreement if we choose to attend PAC Beach, we will go in full regalia? Okay.
And then the other thing, part B, and I don't know how important this is, but over the last couple of weeks since we had the discussion at the last board meeting about the study session on the drug and alcohol issues, I was wondering, we never really discussed the larger goals possibly that the board had in the application of this issue to its student body. And I know you can go all the way from we are going to push forward as much as we can a program on abstinence, or we're going to push a program in terms of support groups, or what it really our goal is. And I was just wondering, since there was a recommendation that the study session be moved to September, which I don't have any objection to at all, whether we should have one more discussion before summer as to really what the overall goal is that we're hoping to address with the alcohol and drug study session before we go into a full-blown event, as to really, is it abstinence? Is it helping students who have drug and alcohol issues be better students, accomplish more school? Is it the recognition issues?
I agree with John to a certain extent. I'm not sure that the question is more, for me, is more about what options or what things we want to promote or outcomes we want to promote. I'm more concerned about what's the purpose of the event that we're going to hold, a study session. Who are we aiming it at? If Mark's view is that we're going to bring all these folks in just to brief the board, that's one thing. If we're doing it and to raise public awareness, parent awareness, something like that. So I'm just unclear about, and I have been, about what we're trying to do with this study session.
Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers.
Madam President, I was wondering if perhaps a follow-up to John's comment, Mr. Spadafore's comment, would be that we could reconvene our subcommittee to look at, if we are going for this program for next fall as opposed to immediately. I do have some concerns about that because some of the things I had hoped would come out of that I would hope would be in place for next fall, but if we run out of time, then our next alternative would be to reconvene the subcommittee to try to be more specific about what we're hoping to accomplish in the study session.
I would agree with that.
Okay, who was you were on that subcommittee, John? Okay, so then do you think that you would be able to get together prior to the next board meeting? Okay. Just let us know where you stand.
Okay. Great. Okay. Thank you.
And then possibly what we can do is present that. One of us can present it under board reports. Okay. Thank you.
Well, let me just ask, if we do it that way, is the board going to be able to discuss it? If it's just a board report item, then it's not agendized, so if we wanted to take what the subcommittee has determined and discuss it and work with it, then it would have to be an agendized item.
Well, if we did a board report and there was a need, the board felt, to discuss it further, would it then be put on the agenda for the next meeting to discuss it if they felt that it needed to be explored further with the public?
I guess we could do it that way. We could also just put a placeholder on the agenda so that if the report generated a desire to discuss it further, we could do it, and if it didn't, we could just move on. So I think that might. I'd kind of like to get some of this stuff nailed down, even though we're going to wait till September and far enough in advance that our folks have an idea of what we're really driving at and what we want to accomplish.
Well, the other piece is that the subcommittee could report to the clerk and the president, and you guys can agendize it. Okay. So.
I just want to mention I spent time a fair amount of time with Mary, and I apologize in preparation for this, and I believe others have also spent time with Mary trying to get this before the administration so that there's no surprises.
Dr. Valentine.
just a procedural question for senior portraits, and we're working with that individual and with our high schools to see if we can realize his objectives.
Okay. Would you like to move it?
I make a motion for adjournment of tonight's meeting.
Second.
Good work, everybody.
We're adjourned.